Millennials need a strong conservative voice. That voice is James Lomax. It's the James Lomax Show right here on News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM WVNN. Depend on it.
Hello and welcome to the James Lomax Show on WVNN, 92.5 FM, 770 AM. I'm your host, Drew Pendergrass. James is out this week. Today we're going to be spending the entire episode talking about a historical event different from any in recent memory, the 2016 Republican National Convention. The convention has dominated headlines for the past few days, but now is a good time to look back and consider what this means for the future of the GOP, the 2016 general election, and the Democratic National Convention next week. You can guarantee that Hillary Clinton and her convention organizers will attempt to throw themselves in stark relief to what went on at the RNC. Although Trump called it, quote, one of the most love-filled conventions in the history of conventions, it revealed a deeply ununited party and sowed dissent among normal Republican supporters like the Wall Street Journal and the National Review. So this episode will be not only about the convention, but about the future of conservative thought in the United States. I know it's a lot to consider in just 30 minutes. We'll start out with a quick overview of the highlights of the convention, and then I will introduce a guest who will be talking with me about all this might mean for the GOP in 2016 and in later elections. Day one of the convention, which took place in the Quicken Loans Arena in Cleveland, Ohio, kept to the theme Make America Safe Again, which featured speakers like Alabama Senator Jeff Sessions, Iowa Senator and hog castrator Joni Ernst, Willie Robertson of Duck Dynasty fame, GOP rising star Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas, and a red-faced and furious Rudy Giuliani. There was some emotional testimony as well from a mother of a victim of the Benghazi attacks, who Trump somewhat undercut when he called into Fox News while she was giving her speech. But the most unforgettable part of Monday night was Melania Trump's speech, which led to some enormous uproar when it was revealed significant parts were lifted from one Michelle Obama gave in 2008. Day two followed the theme Make America Work Again, where Chris Christie memorably called for Hillary Clinton to be put in prison in a speech with much audience participation. This is also the day when Donald Trump was officially nominated by none other than Jeff Sessions, putting down the anemic Never Trump movement. Later, Ben Carson more or less compared Hillary Clinton to Lucifer, and the benediction was given by a Muslim, which seemed to make the crowd uncomfortable. Day three was Make America First Again, where Ted Cruz made a point of not endorsing Donald Trump, a huge gamble. We'll be talking about that move throughout the episode. And the last day, Make America One Again, featured an interesting speech from provocateur and Silicon Valley executive Peter Thiel, who loudly endorsed Trump, declared he was proud to be gay, and criticized the recent transgender bathroom bills like the one in North Carolina. This is also when Trump gave his Law and Order acceptance speech, which was seen as both a dark call to action and fire and brimstone pessimism. We'll see how it pays off in the coming weeks. Now here to talk with us more about the convention and American conservatism in general, I'm pleased to introduce Chris O'Neill, who is here in the studio with me today. He is the host of the podcast Simply Opinions, which addresses political events around the world. The most recent episode of his podcast tackled topics as diverse as the new president of the Philippines, the Brexit vote, and, of course, the election in the U.S. Chris, it's good to have you with us.
Thank you so much for having me, Drew. It's good to be on here.
All right. I've alluded to the schism in the Republican Party in this episode so far. The Wall Street Journal editorial page has long been considered the center of business conservatism. Brett Stevens, who is the deputy editorial page editor of that publication, tweeted that Trump's acceptance speech was, quote, a relentless, unyielding, humorless, hectoring appeal to fear and loathing. Very strong words. I could not imagine him using those words with the speech Mitt Romney would have given. What do you think this means for the future of mainline and business conservatives in the GOP?
Well, I think what Trump is appealing to is it's very different from what we've seen in the past with the GOP. Basically, he is appealing to nationalism, fears that the voters have, and I think this will, in some sense, alienate business conservatives and the religious right, so faith-based conservatives as well. And I just think that it is very different from what we have seen in previous years.
Yeah, in the past we've had this kind of weird union of, you know, the Fox News sort of crowd, religious conservatism's business conservative. Was that union ever strong, or is Trump actively breaking that?
I think Trump is actively breaking that in some sense, because basically I think that the union between the religious right and business conservatives, it existed, and I guess in some years it was a bit more uncomfortable and a bit strained, but they could get together and basically work to elect GOP politicians, get House majorities, win elections. And I think with a candidate like Trump coming in, he's appealing more so to the religious right than he is appealing to business conservatives, though he has some support with them as well. And I think the business conservatives would like a more moderate candidate or one that is perceived to be more moderate, like Marco Rubio, Jeb Bush, John Kasich, who's basically what we've always been getting with GOP conventions, primaries, and one that is less likely to alienate general America, in their opinion.
Yeah. To continue with our discussion on the schism in the Republican Party, do you think Ted Cruz's non-endorsement of Trump, he said to, quote, vote your conscience in November, do you think that that move will pay off in 2020 when he might run for president again?
I think it definitely could pay off for him in 2020. I mean, obviously, Trump would need to lose the election this year first. But in 2020, he has pretty much set himself up to be the only conservative. Like, he can say, I am a principled conservative. I am the only one who stood up to Donald Trump. I stood up to Donald Trump right to his face. And if Trump loses this year, then he could essentially say that he is the new standard bearer for the GOP. Now, if Trump wins the election, it would be very interesting to see if Ted Cruz were to make a sort of subversive run in the GOP primaries in 2020. But in that case, I think a Trump victory would result in a huge realignment of the Republican Party. And I think that Ted Cruz could be pretty easily squashed in 2020 should Trump win.
Yeah. If you're just tuning in, this is WVNN 92.5 FM, 770 AM. This is the James Lomax Show. We're talking the Republican National Convention. We've been talking about the schism in the Republican Party so far. Recently, conservative columnist Ross Douthat of the New York Times has tweeted that Donald Trump represents a campaign based on ethno-nationalism, which is distinct from the Tea Party's constitutionalism/limited government and George Bush's faith-based compassionate conservatism. He proposed that a sort of pan-ethnic nationalism could be a uniting force in the U.S., which is something that Donald Trump is not attempting to do, at least so far. Do you think that that pan-ethnic nationalism is achievable? How can a diverse nation build a conservative party?
I really don't think that a sort of ethno-nationalism is an achievable goal for the Republican Party because of the fact that the United States is so diverse and Trump is appealing to really one ethnic group in general, and that would be white Caucasian Americans. And his run seems to be alienating Latino voters, black voters mainly. And that I feel like that is not going to be helpful for that sort of pan-ethnic nationalism, because pan-ethnic centrism, because of the fact that basically, obviously, not all white people will support Donald Trump, and I don't think that he can get his support amongst white Americans high enough to overcome the white Americans who do not support him, in addition to minority groups in the country.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that a candidate other than Donald Trump could perhaps use that roadway that Ross Douthat mapped out, the having a union around patriotism, nationalism across ethnic groups? Do you think that's possible?
Oh, that is a really interesting question. I mean, Donald Trump is a character, and I think a lot of people are drawn to him because of the fact that he is a character. He presents himself as a billionaire, as a successful businessman, and people are definitely drawn to that, and that sort of sucks them in even more when he talks about his message about America, the ethnocentric undertones. I think if it were a more typical politician, someone who is like a European populist or something like that, I don't think that person would be as successful in this country as Trump is, because I think Trump's wild card factor is a large reason why he's successful. I think if it were someone who were if it were someone who was openly simply just anti-immigrant, anti-Islam, something like that, I don't think that person would be as successful in the United States because of the fact that um, they that they could just really be boring and it would be easier to attack them for being bigoted.
Yes, and we see that all the time. We've had primary candidates who have tried to do that. We have, you know, Newt Gingrich tried to do something like that, that kind of European-style populism, and it doesn't seem to take as well. But coming through the character of Donald Trump, it's really taken a hold.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of moving on to a new subject, not only has Trump had problems with uniting conservatives, he's had problems with minorities, the least of which revealed itself when he tweeted a picture of himself eating a taco bowl, claiming he loved Hispanics. The Hispanic Chamber of Commerce has endorsed Hillary Clinton in what they themselves called an unprecedented move. This is highly unusual, as in almost all cases, an organization that calls itself Chamber of Commerce supports Republican pro-business candidates. This goes back to the Wall Street Journal being critical of Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
These traditional Republican groups are kind of coming out against him. What do you think that this Hispanic Chamber of Commerce's endorsement of Hillary Clinton says about Donald Trump's problems with minorities?
Well, I mean, I think we have established here that the Republican Party has been so successful in politics because of the alliance between faith-based conservatives and business conservatives. And the business conservative side of it has created, obviously, pro-business policies that the Chamber of Commerce, the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, organizations of small businesses, they like these policies. And the fact that the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce is coming forward and saying in an unprecedented move, we are going to endorse Hillary Clinton, which they would obviously feel is less business friendly than the Republican Party, says that the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce does not want to associate themselves with the Trump campaign this year because of the fact that they I believe in their statement, they talked about how they felt that his rhetoric was alienating towards the Hispanic community.
Yeah, we definitely have an unusual state where Donald Trump's statements and stuff outweigh any sort of policy that he has proposed.
Mm-hmm.
The radicalness or just sometimes, frankly, stupid things he says really tend to mess with whatever message he might be trying to get across. So now moving on a little more contentious area. The Republican convention took place amid a national discussion on race and police violence. The hashtag turn movement Black Lives Matter has been used to protest police violence. The counter to that, Blue Lives Matter, which defends police, emerged after the Dallas shooting of several police officers. The RNC largely took the position expressed by Blue Lives Matter. How do you think this will influence the election?
Well, I think this will continue to alienate minority voters because of the fact that obviously these people obviously no one's going to openly say that they do not support the police, and no one's going to say that they are against law and order. But there are definitely voters in the United States who feel like they have been marginalized and they feel like that they are affected by police violence. And I think I think when Donald Trump comes up on the Republican National Convention and says, I am the law and order candidate, and sort of contributes to a rhetoric of a war against the police, I think that those people feel like that they are being ignored, and that would definitely make them think, yeah, I have to vote for Hillary Clinton because Donald Trump clearly does not care about the issues that I care about.
Yes, and some of the words he uses, the America First motto, back to Charles Lindbergh, the anti-Jewish kind of movement in World War II, and his idea, then the Blue Lives Matter being against Black Lives Matter, very contentious, and then also Law and Order itself is kind of a dog whistle back to George Wallace, who called himself the Law and Order candidate in 1968. So even his language itself expresses that even if he doesn't explicitly come out and say, I'm against minorities, although sometimes he comes pretty close, I'll build a wall. So moving on to more problems with minorities, in the GOP in general, not with Donald Trump today, Representative Steve King of Iowa asked, quote, where did any other subgroup of people contribute as much to civilization? I'm referring to the difference between white Europeans and the rest of the world. Some have considered this comment to be a defense of white nationalism. What do you think of that?
Well, I think pretty much what the effect that the Trump campaign has had this year is he's sort of normalized discussions relating to ethnocentrism in the United States and discussions that people perceive to be bigoted, to say the least, white nationalist. Steve King has – he actually has a history of certain things. He's from the state of Iowa, obviously, and he has a Confederate flag on his desk as one thing. And then basically, like, making these statements sort of he takes the position that only white civilization has contributed, and that just sort of normalizes the position, and that's definitely just going to continue to alienate people, and it has formed the basis for a campaign for the Democratic candidate for Iowa's 4th Congressional District to try to take it back, and that's a right-leaning district.
Yeah, and there are all these sorts of things, you know, the David Duke controversy, all these things really reveal some of Donald Trump's problems with minorities. And with that, we're going to be back after this short break talking more about the RNC. This is Drew Pendergrass filling in for James Lomax here with Chris O'Neill in the studio. Hello and welcome back to the James Lomax Show on 92.5 FM 770 AM WVNN. This is your host, Drew Pendergrass, filling in for James Lomax this week. I'm here in the studio with Chris O'Neill, who is the host of the podcast Simply Opinions, and we've been talking about the Republican National Convention all episode. So we're going to jump right back in to where we were right before the break, and we're going to talk a little bit more about what this means for Hillary Clinton. Something made very clear by the Republican National Convention was the level of hatred towards Hillary Clinton held by a significant part of the population. Chris Christie had the crowd cheering to, quote, lock her up. Brian Beutler of the New Republic has called this phenomenon Hillary Clinton's hate debt. Why do you think Clinton has so much, quote, hate debt?
Well, Hillary Clinton, I mean, she has been in – she's been a figure in American politics for like 24 years at least, maybe more. And, you know, she's just she is commonly seen as an establishment politician. And if you want to be a successful politician, you have to change your views, or you have to give general statements. You have to take money from large donors. And she has done all of that very well, being pretty much just a standard politician. And it's the fact that she has just been here for such a long time, and she has been, you know, whether it was starting off heading President Clinton's health care reform committee or going around the country trying to essentially find a retiring senator, a retiring Democratic senator willing to endorse her, which is how she chose New York as her home state, to being the Secretary of State of the United States, controversies about the Clinton Foundation, her emails, Benghazi, all these different controversies that she has been associated with, that just pretty much builds up over a very long time. And I think people are surprised by the fact that she hasn't been taken out politically long ago.
Yes, and this is definitely not a year for establishment politicians, as we've seen by the nomination of Donald Trump, just to be clear, and Bernie Sanders' success. Mm-hmm. This is not a year for establishment. So whatever hate debt Hillary Clinton had already built up, it has definitely grown in 2016. Moving on also to something more specific about the convention, Peter Thiel, what do you think of his speech? As a quick reminder, Peter Thiel is a Silicon Valley executive who endorsed Trump while simultaneously supporting gay rights and opposing the transgender bathroom bills. This flies in the face of this year's extremely conservative Republican platform, the most conservative, in my opinion, ever. Thiel attributes much of his success in Silicon Valley to his contrarian nature, which seems to explain his endorsement of Donald Trump, something that does not really fit the libertarian spirit of Silicon Valley, especially when he has such a strong libertarian candidate this year, Gary Johnson. Do you think this means that the Republican Party will abandon some of its culture wars, the gay rights issue, the transgender bathroom issue, in the coming years?
Well, that's sort of hard to say. I'm inclined to say that they will not, because of the fact that basically, you know, if Donald Trump loses this year, then basically what they have is they're going to have to figure out a new strategy this year. Donald Trump winning right now 538 gives him a 40% chance of winning in November. basically that would lead to realignment of the party. And in that situation where you have Donald Trump at the top of the party and then him choosing a cabinet and then Republican politicians are going to have to fall in line with him going down ticket, I think you could see an abandonment of culture wars in the coming year. You could see the Republican Party become more of a typical populist nationalist party that you would see in Europe, you know, advocating for strong borders, you know, unity in the nation, stuff like that. But if Trump loses in November, I think that what you're going to have, as we talked about earlier, you're going to have a guy like Cruz, and he's going to end up being the standard bearer because he was the one person who opposed Trump in what could potentially be like a landslide victory for Hillary Clinton. People are not going to want to do that again. And what you would probably see in the 2020 race, should Trump lose, would be a divide between Cruz, and you would see people maybe like John Kasich, who were not as hardcore against Trump. And you're going to see a divide between those two.
Yes, I could definitely see Cruz making the same argument he made this year, which is he said this year that the reason Mitt Romney lost is he was not conservative enough. Mm-hmm. And you can definitely see him making that argument way more effectively in 2020 with the argument Donald Trump was not conservative enough. And another thing I wanted to talk to you about, Donald Trump recently gave an interview with the New York Times in the midst of the convention about his foreign policy ideas. Among these ideas was a fierce criticism of NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, mm-hmm. As well as a loud statement of his belief that America has too many problems to be criticizing Turkey or other nations in turmoil, which honestly sounds more like the socialist documentarian Michael Moore than a Republican nominee. Very unusual moves on Trump's part. Columnist and reporter Jeffrey Goldberg claimed that Trump's foreign policy, quote, would bring on an end to the post-war international order and liberate dictators. Do you think Goldberg has a point? Does America need to rethink its alliance system in the post-Cold War world?
I do not think that we need to rethink NATO. I think that this is a huge misstep on Trump's part because of the fact that even though he is an outsider and he has succeeded this year, part of what makes the Republican Party the Republican Party and part of what contributes to the success is pro-defense, staying with our allies, and NATO is a huge part of that. NATO has been very kind to us. The only time that Article 5 of the North Atlantic Treaty, an attack on one, basically they came to our aid after 9/11 when we invaded Afghanistan to take out the Taliban. Basically, I think it would just be a huge misstep on Trump's part to say we are not going to come in and aid Estonia, say, if Russia invades them.
Yes, definitely. And Russia's oversteps have definitely become concerning recently, but Trump has the support of Vladimir Putin and the Kremlin, which is something that it seems pretty terrifying, honestly, and that's something that Jeffrey Goldberg brought out in his article. This has been a wonderful discussion, Chris. Thanks for talking with us. We've been talking about the Republican National Convention all episode, and we will definitely be looking forward to the Democratic National Convention to see how Hillary Clinton will respond to some of the chaos that has ensued in the Trump convention. Thanks for tuning in. This has been the James Lomax Show. I'm your host, Drew Pendergrass.